Hey, folks, and welcome to the Small Tech Podcast. I'm Raf from EC, and today we have an amazing, wonderful guest. She is the director of Kiriko, an instructor at Simon Fraser University's Social Innovation Certificate Program, was the co-founder of Kudos, has done a variety of things with InWith Forward and Possibilities and all kinds of great work in sort of social impact and now tech things as well. She is Janie Rowe. Hi, Janie.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. I would love to hear about your background and how it led you into sort of tech things like Kudos and Kiriko and what that journey has been like.
I probably would have considered myself one of the least technical people in that kind of a vein. But yes, I started out actually in education, and that's where I found myself then moving into the social service sector. I used to work in pre-employment programs in Vancouver and then moved to working with Possibilities, a large organization that supports adults with a cognitive disability. And I was managing between 11 to 13 different programs and was feeling a bit stuck around how we could get folks more involved and engaged with community. And then this posting came up of joining something called the Burnaby Starter Project through partnership with the other organizations, Burnaby Association for Community Inclusion, Kinsight, along with a social design agency, InWith Forward. And they had been putting out a posting saying they were going to do a research project over a period of 10 weeks to explore social isolation and loneliness in the city of Burnaby. And I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity to figure out a way to get better connected with community. And so I joined that project. We moved into a social housing complex in Burnaby for a period of 10 weeks, spent lots of time with folks that were living there and in the surrounding areas to see what their day-to-day life was like. And out of that project came a number of ideas to prototype. And one of them was Kudos. And Kudos was an experience platform connecting people with and without disabilities to in-person experiences across the Lower Mainland. And that ran for a period of about 7-8 years and ran quite well until the pandemic. And the partnership that had formed Kudos also had a number of other prototypes that were running alongside of it with a shared mission around raising disability awareness, building community, reducing stigma. And we took the opportunity during the pandemic to bring a number of those prototypes together under one, which is now called Kiriko. And Kiriko launched a couple of years ago. And so I've fallen into this tech kind of space accidentally. And it's been really exciting and a lot of learning. I'm still constantly learning as I go, but that's what led us here.
Amazing. I'm curious, when you did the program and then you eventually set up Kudos, was it always with the intention of building something web-based or like tech, or was that not necessarily an outcome that you were looking for?
Yeah, I think the intention back then was always to have something that was web-based. Kudos also had a mobile app that was developed to accompany it. And the mobile app was developed because we did a lot of research around how do people learn and how do people learn best. And so we knew that reflection was a key component of really internalizing some of the learning that someone might have from an experience. And so the mobile app took a series of photos that would then be able to go on somebody's profile that then people could ask them about afterwards and see how things went. What did they learn from it, but also what did they learn about themselves? How did they feel after that particular experience? And did that spark anything different for them around how they viewed themselves or what they wanted to do or how they wanted to spend their time in the future?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like, especially just thinking about tech in the sort of big tech perspective, right? The way that people interact with each other and themselves and understanding themselves. As your like perspective on like how those things work over the years changed, or I feel like the whole ecosystem has changed in like our thinking of like how we live with technology. Yeah.
I think for us, and I think like with like lots of folks, when we first started Kudos and then we're moving to Kiriko, I think over the years, our learning a lot has been around accessibility of technology And yeah. I think that is often really taken for granted. A lot of the accessibility tools, even themselves or plugins people have on their websites, aren't that accessible. They require some level of literacy, maybe aren't that compatible with screen readers, those kinds of things. I think for us, we wanted to create something that was not just user-friendly, but also created a really delightful, joyful experience that then would be reflective of what types of experiences they might have through utilizing the platform and meeting community members and sharing experience either with podcasting or knitting or kickboxing or brewery tours or whatever was on the catalog during that period of time. And I think for us during the pandemic, just really saw how much people were really isolated. And so technology became a real tool to be able to stay connected. And so there was a number of folks for whom technology was still a barrier. And so spending some time to ensure people had the right equipment, the right access, do you have stable internet connection? And I think those are a lot of things that lots of folks really just take for granted. But we had a lot of that too in the early days of Kudo. So we actually used to have a loaner program.
Oh, cool.
Where we would collect, you know, older devices and donations of devices, and we would issue them for free to folks because the Kudo's mobile app didn't require an internet connection. You could use it without. And so that was like a bit of a gateway for people to start using technology and then get familiar with it. And then a number of those folks actually then went on to get their own devices afterwards.
Oh, cool. There's something like really interesting to think about there in that I feel like some of those things are possible in the context of small tech, right? Like things that are very like community driven, that's very focused on connection, whereas the big companies are very focused on like the metrics and how many likes do you get on a thing and that sort of thing. And I think there's something really beautiful in how Kiriko and the way that you work with community and really thinking about the people as opposed to just the engagement stats or anything like that. So I love that. I'm curious, is there anything that you found like over the years, either when you first got into this or even just over time, things that you found surprising as you got into building technology? I'm sure there's plenty. Surprising or unusual or, yeah, just things that you did not expect as you got into building tech products.
Yeah, I think just how nuanced usability is, right? I think that piece, and I think also just in terms of like how much time things will take, right? I think on the surface, it looks like we create like these beautiful designs and then how difficult would it be to implement something like this? And then really learning that actually like what is required on the back end to make some of those things happen. I think like even us having our booking system and developing our own bespoke calendar system to fit in with the platform was a lot of learning, timeline, scope, budget, all that kind of project management stuff. And I think how many other tools there are available for us to be able to utilize and plug in. And also that a number of those organizations really trying to find organizations and tools that we utilize that also share our values. I think that was like a big piece too, is that approaching these different places and asking them if they had considered how they could make their products more accessible to the broader public, especially to smaller nonprofits, where, you know, the pricing of some of these plugins or tools that you could utilize are really a barrier for people to be able to engage with.
Yeah, that actually makes me think of a question. Accessibility means a lot of things, right? It can be screen readers, but it can also be just the contrast of text on a page, or it can be making sure that the language is accessible to someone. It means so many things. And how do you think about that in the context of designing a product, designing an experience? Yeah, how do you frame your thinking around like all of the different forms of accessibility? And I guess, yeah, how does that inform, or how do you see that reflected in those products that you were just talking about? Do they generally consider all of those things? Are there some that do better? How does that come across?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think like also a great question for our UX designers, Raph and Boyd, right? Because I think they're a big part of it. I think part of it is our own practice and our methods of co-design and co-production. And so every time that Boyd and Raph are working on a new feature, they are thinking about the accessibility considerations and they're constantly developing and testing that with our community members. So they're getting feedback. And so that is all built into that design process so that we're making sure we're not just trying to adhere to the regulatory standards of accessibility, but how does it actually work for the people that are using it? And how does this feel like that is being designed and produced alongside of our community members? And so I think that's where we gain also the most insights. Is that we think, oh, this looks fine. I think when we were doing some user testing, I was able to sit in on some sessions and people were like, oh, they had no idea that they needed to scroll down the page to get more information, right? Because if you don't have any indicators there, where is that? But also in terms of just like people and, you know, how big certain things should be or where certain things are placed so that they don't accidentally click the same thing because it's too close to another thing. Just those kinds of pieces. And so I think for us doing a lot of that, those sessions with community members, it's been really helpful.
Yeah, awesome. And do you find that the tools that you plug into, do they generally think about accessibility? How do they align?
Yeah, I'm sure there are some considerations. I think that you mentioned contrast, screen readability, those kinds of things. But I think there's definitely barriers. There's barriers for me too, to be able to use some of them, right? Yeah. Particularly now that everything has two-factor authentication or that you have to be able to use like an SSO to sign on to something. Like these are some things that I think are not, that can present some barriers for folks for sure. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of places where they're like, every site has like an FAQ or something like that. And some of them are a little bit more robust than others, or have a short series of videos. But I think a lot of them have an assumption that you have some technological knowledge before you're even engaging with some of their tutorials or ways that, you know, you can help. And oftentimes I'm just trying to reach a live person.
Yeah. Do those exist? Live people? I feel like
it's like
the internet is just bots now.
There's a lot of gatekeeping, I think, with the live people. You've got to do a live chat, which is really a bot. Then you got to send an email. Then sometimes I have to send a message through social media in some way. And then but usually, hey, can I just talk to somebody? It takes a bit of steps. Yeah.
Yep. That also makes me think of, is there funding specifically for accessibility projects?
I think for us, we've been really fortunate with some of our funding sources. We do receive most of our funding from Community Living British Columbia, as well as some grants that we've received through either Vancouver Foundation, Israeli Foundation, and then also Vancouver Coastal Health. And then, of course, with the partnership with the four organizations, there's support provided in numerous ways with that. And so I think what we found to be a bit tricky is that people are willing to fund, some places are willing to fund the R&D, the development costs, and then funding stops. And then they don't want to fund implementation and then the ongoing operations of the product, the result of that R&D process. And so I think we have also learned from us in this space and the tech world is that you have to constantly and consistently invest in the R&D because technology is changing. Things are changing quite rapidly sometimes and others less, but that you can't build one thing and then just leave it for 5-6 years and then revisit it then because it's then out of date or things aren't being as responsive as they need to. And I think it's also not being responsive to the changing wants and desires of the community. And so that has been like a big learning for us in terms of like, how do we account for funding and how do we budget for that ongoing R&D piece?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. With that in mind, in this sort of social impact space, what tips would you have for if a social entrepreneur was listening to this and was thinking of building a product to serve their community, what are some things that you would advise them to think about when it comes to funding?
I think look for places, organizations that align with your values. I think that's the big piece of it. And that really see the longer term vision of what you're trying to achieve. I think for us with Curco, the big part is that we are trying to build a community and build a community of people with and without disabilities and challenge ableism and challenge stigma. We had read some recent literature by Tessa Charlesworth that said at the current rate, it would take 200 years before disability, internalized disability bias was neutralized. And that was a shocking stat for us. And so I think it's to try and seek out people that also feel like that is too long and that we've got to work together to make headway on that. And so I think being able to find funders that are real allies and are real champions and supporters of the vision and also share those values around our Curico values of building community, ensuring people are living flourishing lives. I think that's the biggest kind of learning for us.
Yeah. Is there anything operationally that you would think about? Is I think even just like funding cycles and stuff like that.
I think more money isn't always better. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing, right? For us, it's people feel like you need all this money or you need all this capital in order to continue things going, but you can start small. And more money means more reporting, more things that you have to be accountable for. And I think you have to be really careful about whether you want to receive that or not. And does that add to your kind of vision and the strategy that you have moving forward? Does it adhere with your values? Or is it going to sway you away from it? And oftentimes, you will try and contort yourself to fit a particular funding guide template or funding guide regulations or all of those kinds of things. And then you need to then figure out how you're going to report on those additional pieces to your funders, which then creates not just, I think, more work, but it also creates the wrong kind of work, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's not who we're really wanting to prioritize. We're wanting to prioritize community, not a checkbox on a funding report.
Yep. I think that makes a lot of sense. I've heard of people in just broader sort of startup space also talking about things like R&D funding and how it moves them off course. Instead of serving their customers, they're serving the funders.
Yeah, I think part of that is in the power structure, right? Is that inevitably when somebody is giving you money and a large portion of money, you feel like, oh, I've got to align with that. But I think choosing funders that are also prioritizing the right, like the community members, the people for whom your product or your intervention or your service or whatever you're developing is for.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How does the broader sort of program design and how does that intersect with specifically the tech product and the different stakeholders, funders, the team, admin team, and the users? And I guess there must be others too, but those I feel are the sort of three that I generally think about. But how do those things all come together? And are there, what are the tensions that you find most, I don't know, that pop up on the most regular basis? And how do you handle them?
I feel like we're in a pretty good place with that in terms of we have really great funders that I think allow a lot of freedom and flexibility in the development. I think what happens with community and the tech sometimes is our community members are really wide ranging. Mm-hmm. And we'll do some testing with some folks and usability of a particular feature, some things might come up, but then it doesn't come up, like something else comes up with a different segment of users and then a different segment of users. And so then for us on our side, it's like, which direction do we go in? Which segment of users are you prioritizing? And is there a bit of a happy medium? If you were to think about like the Venn diagram, a circle, like where's the overlap of all three? And what's like an elegant solution that could meet the desires of all of them? But I think for us, it's also understanding you can't always make everything work for everybody.
Yeah.
And so it's trying to really understand what's working for whom, when, and what's not. And then using that learning to then move into development.
Yeah, cool. I feel like I had another question on that. So Curico, there's a lot of stuff. I think we at EC are very focused on like the thing that shows up on the screen, but there's so much more than that. There's the sort of the in-person experiences and events and the actual like community itself, like the managing those relationships between people. Yeah. Could you talk a bit more about how those relationships, how you build them, how do you build trust and how all of those things come back to product?
Yeah. So we've got a number of roles on the team that are community facing roles. So we have a curation team that works with hosts to build experiences, put them up on the platform, works with hosts on ongoing sort of engagement with those experiences, offer any coaching or troubleshooting if things might kind of come up. And then we've got coaches, and coaches work with folks that are engaging with the community as participants and who might want some coaching around facing a particular barrier and building strategies. And then we have, of course, like our volunteer moderators that support hosts with online experiences to make sure they run smooth so that the host can really focus on and exit, not have to worry about the technical aspects of the running. And alongside of all those roles also comes a series of, as you mentioned, in-person interactions outside of those experiences and building the relationship and building community. And so really we utilize the Kirko platform as a tool to support many of those ongoing interactions and relationships. And so I think that's, we're often have this conversation of, do we feel like the platform reflects, how do we make more of our community voices or stories be shared through the platform? And that's where we're always constantly like iterating. And right now we're working on redoing a little bit of the homepage and things like that, so that we're able to include some of the things that we feel like are not being shown as much as we'd like it to currently on the website.
Yep, that makes sense. I feel like that covers most of my questions. Is there anything else that you want to talk about with Kirko, or any final tips or learnings or anything?
Oh, final tips and learning. there's always learning to be had. That's for sure. It's like a real journey. I would just encourage your users, if they want to check it out, it's kirko.ca. It's open and free to everybody. It is really a place for people that are wanting and looking for different ways to connect either with themselves or other people or places or culture, you name it. Yeah, I think it's just an open space. And I think for us, it's like constantly reflecting on how we can utilize Kirko and tech to build and foster these meaningful connections within our community.
Amazing. So last question, a small tech product that you use that does something good in your life.
Yeah, I was thinking about it and I was like, I use this Seesaw app, and it is an app that I think schools use to be able to give parents a little bit of a snapshot of what happens over the course of a day or a project in their child's life. And so I have a little 9-year-old, and so I'm able to, through the app, see photos of what he's doing or working on or who he's spending time with. And that's been a great point of shared conversation with us, because at the end of the day, oftentimes when you ask your child, what did you do today or how did things go? It's always, it was good. And so you get varying details of things that happen. And so I think for me, the Seesaw app helps me stay connected with what's happening in his day to day. And to be able to, if I go back to the old reflection, it's to be able to help him also reflect and be like, oh, what did you learn from that? Or how did you feel when you were doing that? Or who are you spending time with? And so that helps us stay connected.
That's awesome. Cool. Alrighty. Thank you so much, Janie.
Thank you.
Folks, that was my chat with Janie Rowe from Kirko. And I so appreciate her taking the time to chat with me. It was an amazing conversation. I hope you all learned something from it. That is it from the Small Tech Podcast this time around, and we will see you in the next episode. In the meantime, we all want to do something good in the world, so go out there and build something good, folks. See ya.